We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
It's time for the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. Get insight into your favorite West Virginia University teams and hear exclusive interviews. The Mountaineer Insider Podcast is presented by Segra. Segra, powering organizations of all sizes with state-of-the-art voice, data, and internet services. Now, let's go live inside our MSN studios. Here's your host of the Mountaineer Insider, Dan Zangrilli.
And hello again, Mountaineer Nation. Greetings from our makeshift MSN studio for this edition of the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. I'm Dan Zangrilli, and our podcast is brought to you by our friends at Segra. Coming up on this edition of the pod, we'll hear from the Big 12 Conference Commissioner. A lot of interesting nuggets coming out of his teleconference that he held earlier in the week with reporters, the financial ramifications of COVID-19 and the canceling of the Big 12 basketball tournament. Distributions are going to be altered in some way, shape, or form in the long term. And what exactly was the big hit in the pocketbook that the coronavirus has done to not only the entire college landscape, but in particular, the Big 12 Conference. Head football coach Neil Brown giving us plenty of updates. He was able to hold a press conference with reporters without being in the same room. He was able to use Zoom technology, many of you are becoming familiar with it, to either do your jobs or be able to communicate with friends, family, and others. Well, you're able to hold press conferences on that as well. And that's how Neil was able to get the word out as to what's going on with his West Virginia University football team, how they're still staying plenty busy, and how they're able to use this downtime to continue to improve the program. And as far as the impacts of COVID-19, there's been a lot of criticism, I think publicly so, by a number of folks in media entities about young people taking this virus and this pandemic seriously. Well, of course, as the leader of young men, how is Neil's team receiving this news and how are they adhering to the seriousness of COVID-19? You'll hear all of that coming up on this edition of the Mountaineer Insider. But as we head down memory lane, a lot of folks have enjoyed watching, thanks to what WVUSports.com has been able to put out on their digital platforms, the 10-year anniversary of West Virginia's trip to the Final Four. A lot of great victories you've seen so far, and we have another one coming your way on Saturday. And what we can do now is go ahead and reminisce with some of the key contributors on those teams, and we'll do that when we return. Tony Caridi is going to stop by, and he will join the podcast, and he has a one-on-one exclusive interview with Joe Mazzulla, also Wellington Smith, stopping by the program. So that's all coming your way directly ahead here on the Mountaineer Insider Podcast, here on the Mountaineer Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College.
Lumos Networks is now Segra. Segra is proud to support the West Virginia Mountaineers, and we're proud to be investing in the future of Mountaineer Nation. Segra is one of the largest independent fiber bandwidth companies in the U.S. Our new dense fiber network provides the solutions, speed, diversity, scalability, and reliability West Virginia, the Mid-Atlantic, and the Southeast have been asking and waiting for. All across our footprint, Segra is providing customers with local attention and the fastest, most reliable fiber network in the region. Call 833-GO-SEGRA or visit www.segra.com to learn more. We are Segra. Let's go, Mountaineers!
Welcome back to the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. We now send it over to Tony Caridi, who's standing by with Joe Mazzulla.
First off, Joe, can you believe 10 years have gone by?
No, it hasn't hit me that it's been 10 years until everybody kind of started talking about, you know, the 10-year time frame. So it's flown by.
If someone were to ask you, okay, if you didn't think it was 10, how many years does it feel like have gone by?
I mean, probably like 5 or 6.
Yeah,
I would say, you know. But it's now that people have been bringing it up and you've had a chance to reflect on it more, especially over the last month or so, you just realize how special of a moment it is, especially for the, you know, student athletes this year that don't get the opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament. You realize how fortunate we were to play in, I think it was 3 or 4 NCAA tournaments, and then to go as far as we did. You just realize how special it is the longer it goes on.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You had a great experience in the entire NCAA tournament, so you felt it at all levels, right? You got to that pinnacle of the Final Four. When you look back at it, what does it mean to you to have played in a Final Four?
You know, it doesn't necessarily mean a lot. You know, I think you cherish the moment for sure, but I think it's more about just using those moments that you went through as a player and a person to just kind of build for the future. So, you know, it's not like you're a better you're not better because you went to a Final Four and someone else did it. But, you know, because of that experience, you're allowed to connect with different kinds of people and you built relationships with people. So I think it's just more about what that experience did for us and how it shaped us as people. And, you know, it obviously helped us become into the career path that we're in now. And, you know, we all look back and say how that affected us and how that made us better. And we pull from moments of that year and really of our entire career to, especially as a coach, you're constantly evaluating those moments you were in as a player. And when I was coaching in college at Fairmont, I was able to go back and use those moments from the Final Four year and talk to my players about, you know, things that we did on this particular day or, you know, the mindset we were going into this game. So I don't know if it means a ton. It doesn't make you better than the next person, but it just allows you to use those experiences, you know, for the rest of your life to get better.
And what are some of those things that you pull from that season, from that team, that you learn and then you taught and teach to guys that you're currently involved with?
I think the biggest thing is the relationship aspect. You know, I don't know. I can't speak for every team, especially, you know, the West Virginia team since then, but I don't know if there was a better team that was connected to the community and to the people of West Virginia better than that team was. And we weren't even that well connected for the entire year. You know, we talk about the loss to UConn at UConn, and Hugs gives that amazing post-game speech that ends up being our highlight tape introduction for the following year. And I think we became a better team the more we realized what it meant to be a West Virginia Mountaineer and to play for something bigger than ourselves. So I think the biggest thing you pick from that is just the relationship, how close we were as a team, and then how we became a better team once we figured out exactly what we were playing for.
How did that motivate you? I call that the Huggs' Hartford homily, where he kept you guys in the locker room and he gave it to you plain and simple as only he can. What did you learn? What do you think the rest of your teammates learned that then kick-started that team for the rest of the season?
I mean, I think it was just a small – we had a few of those moments as a team throughout the year, but I think it was just a reminder about, hey, you know, like when you're a kid, especially, you know, a college kid, it's very hard to build self and social awareness. So I think what that did more than anything else was just shed perspective on exactly where we were. We had an amazing opportunity. We were top 10 the entire year. We had a chance to, I think, win the most games in school history or, you know, up there. And we had a chance to really do something special, and we just weren't playing, performing, and treating the opportunity with the right mindset. So I think it was just a great refresher to understand where we were at, and you get very few opportunities to accomplish something great with people that you care about. And, you know, if you don't snap out of it and take advantage of it, it's going to end sooner than you think.
You make your living now today at the professional level coaching professional players. And I've often thought that in order to be really successful at the NCAA level, in order to have a chance to win a championship, you've got to have pros on your team, either NBA guys or guys who are going to go on and make money. And when you look at that roster, I mean, by my count, we've had at least eight guys on that team that at some point have played professionally. Why was that team, from a personnel standpoint, put your NBA hat on now, from a personnel standpoint, what did that team have talent-wise? What was it able to do that made it successful?
I mean, I think what we were doing is what every team is doing now. We had length at virtually every position. You know, obviously Truck was hurt, and then if you take me out of the picture, everybody was pretty much 6'5 or taller. You had versatility at every position. I remember, you know, starting – what was it? Me, Devin, Deshaun, Kevin Jones, and Wellington. So you got four guys, 6'6", 6'7", or taller. You have so much versatility. You have so much length. You have so much athleticism. And I think that's what helped us get to the Final Four. But then I think Duke also had that. And they had the ability to match that athleticism and match that length with also a little bit more physicality and size. So I think we were a little ahead of our time in what basketball is now. We were able to switch everything. We were able to make the court so much smaller. When we played our 1-3-1 zone, it really shrunk the floor. And now that's kind of what teams are doing now.
I watched the Missouri game this past weekend, your second game in the NCAA tournament, and that's the one thing that hit me. Being able to switch everything from 1-5 is extremely difficult for opposing teams on offense. Number one, they normally don't see it. And number two, how do you – I mean, if you're doing it well, it's hard to score.
Yeah, and, you know, I think throughout that year we were able to go to that and take teams out of their offense. A lot of teams weren't doing that back then. They weren't switching 1-5. So between that and the 1-3-1 zone, we were just able to take teams out of their comfort zone and create a lot of mismatches and stagnant on the offensive end. And, you know, we got into trouble in the Duke game where they had Zubek, they had the two Plumleys, they could even post Singer a little bit. They were just able to take advantage of that. Those mismatches a little bit better than other teams were throughout that year.
Yeah. Well, before we jump ahead to championship round, the Final Four, let's step back here a little bit. And if you would, just kind of give me your short memories on you have this amazing run at the Big East. You win the Big East tournament, which I know for a Northeast guy from Rhode Island, you grew up knowing all about that tournament. You guys win that. And then the NCAA starts. You're in Buffalo. Morgan State, slow start. You guys get cranking. Next game is Missouri. You guys play well. And now that leads us into the Washington game. They've got a future two-time NBA All-Star and Isaiah Thomas on that team. What are your memories about the Dome and the games that we'll start off here with Washington before we jump ahead to Kentucky. What was the take when you got to that point?
I mean, I think even the Missouri game, you know, we'll go back a little bit, but I think every game we went into, Huggs did a great job of preparing us, but also not making a moment bigger than what it was. You know, it's very easy to get caught up into the hype. You know, take the Missouri, for example, it was the 40 minutes of hell, and you know, they felt like they were cheated out of the 17, I think they were, or maybe they were the 10, or they felt like they should have had better ranking. And I think Truck got hurt in that game, so then it was about we didn't have any ball handlers or backup point guard. But, you know, Hugs prepared us very well without making it bigger than it needed to be and just really highlighting what our strengths were for each game and how to handle each game. So did a great job of handling pressure in the Missouri game and taking them out of their actions. Washington game, you know, we remember watching, and they had really good guards. They had Isaiah. They had Abdul Gaddy. They had a big wing and Quincy Pondexter. But again, everything went back to, I don't know what game it was, but Hugs would always have a saying, like, if we do what we do and they do what they do, we'll win because we're better at what we do. And that's what he focused on, just do what you do. And it doesn't matter who's on the other side of there. If we execute, we'll be fine. So we did a great job of trying to, you know, take those two guards out of their system. And I think our length did that. I think putting Ebanks on Thomas really, really changed that. And then that led us into the Kentucky game.
Ah, yeah, the Kentucky game. I mean, if there's ever a game that obviously Mountaineer fans will never forget, it will be that one. And then on an individual note, and I know you're humble. I mean, I know you're humble, but what you did was so extraordinary and so surprising. You go out on the biggest stage against Kentucky, and you become the most outstanding player of the regional. Just to kind of remind you, in the games leading up, three games leading up to the Kentucky game, you scored 5 points, 3 points, and 3 points. So that's a total of 11. You go into the Kentucky game, you go for 17, 5 field goals, 1 3-pointer, 6 of 8 at the line, 3 assists, couple of steals. You weren't supposed to win that game, and as you said, they thought, well, no Truck Bryant, we can get after this team. We'll absolutely throttle them. Why didn't that happen?
I mean, you know, we'll talk on a, you know, team level first. Again, it goes back to Hugs' preparation. His preparation and his mindset gave us confidence. So it was never we're the underdogs. It was never this team has 6 first round picks. It was always, you know, here's the game plan, do this and you will execute. And he showed us on film exactly what we needed to do, and he showed us on film exactly what their weaknesses were. So, you know, his preparation and the game plan gave us confidence that we were a good team and had a chance to win that. Now, you know, obviously you can't discredit the fortune that went our way of not making any 2-point shots, making 7 3-pointers, I think, or something like that, making all 3s in the first half. So some things went our way. From an individual standpoint, I got lucky because I hit my first shot. So I've always been a player, even in high school. Anytime I hit my first shot, I just felt so much more comfortable and confident, to whereas if I didn't, you know, it was a completely different mindset for me offensively. So I was able to hit my first 3 on that right wing there and just was able to just be comfortable throughout the game and take what the defense gave us.
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? That got you going offensively. But you know, although you had 17, what you're going to be remembered for is your defense.
But the 1-3-1, yeah.
So let's talk about that. 1-3-1 can pose some problems out front. As you said, Devin Ebanks can be a real problem out there. Long arms, guys on the wings, real long. However, the guy playing the back 1-3, the one part of the back end, oftentimes can get in some hellacious defensive assignments. For example, DeMarcus Cousins of Kentucky against Joe Mazzulla.
Yeah. I mean, I think it just comes to, again, we talk about just, you know, what was DeMarcus Cousins great at? How could we frustrate him? And, you know, I'll get a lot of credit for that. But the only reason why it was successful because he was so talented and I was so overmatched that you just had to try really, really hard to be able to take him out of what his comfort level was. So it was just a matter of just constantly leaning on him, constantly having him feel bodies and pressure and just constantly wearing him down. You know, at that time, he was obviously, and still is, a great player. But I think the one area that we could have exposed was his conditioning. So every possession, it was just a matter of leaning on him and making him have to score through people, making him have to just battle through different guys every possession. And then on the offensive end, I think that's one of the misunderstood and one of the underrated things about that game was yes, it was the 1-3-1. We made threes. They missed a lot of threes, but we controlled that game with our offense because we just ran. We made them chase us the entire game, and it was multiple possessions. It was screening. So, you know, he had to come out and guard those guys. And they had to guard for 20 to 25 seconds every single possession. So I think the offense deserves just as much as that 1-3-1 does because of our ability to wear them down.
Yeah, it's a great point.
The other thing people don't remember is Eric Bledsoe got two fouls and Calipari took him out for the rest of the half. That's something that's not talked about a lot. He picked up a cheap one on me. Him and I got into it a little bit, and he picked up his second cheap one and Calipari took him out. I think that was a difference maker in that first half because he, as good as John Wall was, Eric Bledsoe was a tremendous secondary ball handler. And that was one less penetrator that we had to worry about in the first half. Yeah. I think they brought in Darius Miller, I think it was. He's still a pro. He's doing a great job too, but he wasn't the playmaker Eric Bledsoe was. He wasn't as dynamic as he was. So I think it changed the way we were able to guard a little bit too in that first half.
You make a good point. Bledsoe finished the game 7 points. He was 1 of 6 from the free throw line. He had 4 fouls. Darius Miller fouls out in 27 minutes. John Wall fouls out at the end in 39 minutes. You also fouled out of that game.
that was bound to happen.
So in the scouting report, when you guys watch tape in regard to Cousins, what did Hugs and the staff say they wanted you to do to him?
Just make it difficult for him every possession. You know, he felt like we were more conditioned than they were, and it was just make it as difficult as possible on every single possession, make him work for everything, and try and wear him down.
You continued to slam your backside into his knees, into his shins, into his quads. He continued to grow more and more frustrated. There's pictures of him looking at the official like, what is this guy doing? What are you doing? Why aren't you stopping this from happening? How much conversation went on during that?
Not a lot. I mean, I think he was more, like I said, when you have a guy who's so talented and a guy that's so overmatched, the only chance you have is if you try really hard. So I think it was just more of an annoyance than anything else because I was so undermatched in that matchup that it was just difficult for him to have to get through. But there wasn't much conversation, you know, between the two of us, as much as there was, like you said, a kind of like, is he really guarding me this way? Like, what are you really doing? And is this legal?
I guess that's it. Is this legal? Can he do this?
No one's
ever done
this.
You've got to think of that. It had to stun him. Here's a 5 man that's been guarded by 5 men all year long. And all of a sudden he's got a point guard just continuing to whack at him. And I mean, the way you guarded is, I mean, wasn't that just classic prototypical of what Bob Huggins demanded from his teams?
That's what he wanted. And, you know, like then, like everybody asks, is it difficult to play for Huggs? And it's really not. Like, he's a great communicator and he tells you exactly what he wants done. And it's just a matter of doing it. So, you know, he's very clear cut in his communication and how he wants you to execute, and you just have to do it.
So you've been in the league and you see these guys. We've been talking about guys that are still playing in the league. John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins. Have you had sightings, conversations? Do they remember you?
I haven't had too many with them. You know, I think what's cooler is just, you know, in our organization with the Celtics, you have with Kemba Walker and Brad Wanamaker, Gordon Hayward, you know, Coach Stevens. So you got 4 people who, you know, 2 of which were in the Final Four with us, and then 2 that we just had great Big East battles with. So we have more conversations about stuff like that and just talk about the good times that we had in college competing against each other. But, you know, as far as outside that, I don't have too many conversations.
Did Brad Stevens first click on to Joe Mazzulla when he coached in the Final Four? Did he ever say, I remember you, I saw you, I loved your tenacity? Did that start a relationship?
No, I don't think he ever said that. I think it was more just working for the G League team. You know, Brad does a great job of when you work a part of the organization, he makes you feel a part of it. So even if you're working with the G League team, he's still very tuned in into who you are as a person. Even when I left there to go to Fairmont State, you know, he knew how Fairmont State was doing. He knew about our team, our program, the school. So I think it was just more of him, how he builds a relationship with everybody that works for him and with him.
Yeah. What's the one thing you wish that you knew then that you have accumulated now?
I'd say go back to that week, the day after that game versus Kentucky. I wish I could take that week back. Not that I you regret anything, but I think the biggest difference, obviously Duke was more athletic, and I think they had some great pros as well, and they played – those pros played better than maybe Kentucky's pros did on that particular night. But I just think from an overall mindset standpoint, Duke was more ready for the moment than we were. And I don't think it was anything that Coach Huggins and the staff did. I think it was just, and I'm speaking more for me personally, that was a long week leading up to the game. Preparing an entire week for one opponent, and the media was so much different than it was for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, and you got the media every single day. You got the commercials. You got the pregame shows, the halftime stuff. So you have so much going on. And for me personally, by the time the game started, I was tired mentally and emotionally. Knowing what I know now and kind of how we train now, and I definitely wish just had a little bit more mental and emotional energy leading into the game on that Saturday.
That's a great point. I think also, Joe, the fact that West Virginia had beaten Duke and eliminated them from the NCAA tournament in D.C. when Singler was a younger guy, I always thought that gave them a special piece of motivation as well.
Oh, there's no doubt. As soon as they won their game, I think we won ours first and then Duke won theirs. And as soon as they won, I was like, I don't even think we realize how hard it's going to be because of what we did when we beat them that first time. Just knowing the type of Coach K is, I'm sure those guys heard all about it.
Last point from you here, because I know you have become not just a student of the game when it comes to X's and O's, but you just alluded to a student of the game when it comes to the mental side of things. And I guess I'll rephrase the question. Do you wish that you had more mental training, so to speak, back in your playing days than perhaps you realize how important that could be?
I mean, I think naturally, coaches, the leagues, basketball progresses. And I think mental training, first of all, when people hear that, they think that, there's either something wrong with you or that it's a weakness. That's obviously not the case. But the mental side of performance has become a huge component in basketball in today's game just because of the distractions and everything else that comes with it. So, I think any time it's easy to say that now because of what's available from a sports performance, a sports science standpoint, but back then I thought Coach Huggins did it and the staff did a tremendous job having us prepared for every single game. But for an individual, you definitely wish you have what the later generations have, the sports science, how they do strength and conditioning now, how you handle adversity or approach different moments. People just get better as time goes on.
Yeah, no question about that. All right, so 10 years later, do you pick the ball up anymore? Do you shoot it? I know you work guys out. Do you ever put it down a little bit? Could you still play?
I play. I don't know if I perform. It's obviously a huge difference. But we obviously without the extracurricular activities that you have to do as a college coach, I think one of the things the NBA staffs are, they're a little bit younger and we have a little bit more time because of the, we don't have to recruit and whatnot. So we definitely play a lot more, 3-on-3, 4-on-4. So we definitely play. I don't know how much we're performing though.
Well, in our view, you're always going to be the most outstanding player. Joe Mazzulla, 10 years later, thank you so much for your time and congratulations on not only your days as a player, but what you're doing now in the coaching world.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And it's great to reflect on times that we had at West Virginia. And, it's always been a special place for me as a person and our family. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Tony, thanks very much. Great stuff there with Joe Mazzulla. So let's continue the great basketball talk with Wellington Smith. That comes your way following this word from our friends at Segra.
Lumos Networks is now Segra. Segra is proud to support the West Virginia Mountaineers, and we're proud to be investing in the future of Mountaineer Nation. Segra is one of the largest independent fiber bandwidth companies in the U.S. Our new dense fiber network provides the solutions, speed, diversity, scalability, and reliability West Virginia, the Mid-Atlantic, and the Southeast have been asking and waiting for. All across our footprint, Segra is providing customers with local attention and the fastest, most reliable fiber network in the region. Call 833-GO-SEGRA or visit www.segra.com to learn more. We are Segra. Let's go, Mountaineers!
Welcome back to the podcast. Once again, here's Tony Caridis sitting down with Wellington Smith.
Wellington, the first question is, when someone says to you, you played in the Final Four 10 years ago, does that make you go, oh my gosh, it's been 10 years, or does it seem like 10 years?
Yeah, you know what? It doesn't seem like it's been 10 years, as I remember like it was just yesterday. But, you know, I guess when you say it like that, it's kind of crazy to think that it has been 10 years. You know, all the memories that came with it are still vivid.
For folks that follow the team, they'll remember games. What are the most vivid memories for you? Was it the games, or was it the camaraderie that you guys had together as a team?
Yeah, you know what? It was the camaraderie. You know, I think that's what, you know, people like myself and you know, guys that aren't playing anymore, that's what we miss the most. You know, hanging out in the locker room, you know, kicking with the guys and the coaches, practices, you know, when we always look back on memories, we always talk about practices and conversations and moments. It had nothing to do with the games, right? Those conversations had nothing to do with the games. It was all more about the moments we had that either led up to those games or the moments in between those games that really made that run so impactful.
That's a great point, because I think while it's not maybe on the floor, it's those off the court times where the bonding comes together and you guys build a trust and, let's face it, a love for each other that eventually goes on out onto the court and becomes successful. Fair assessment?
Exactly. Very fair. I think these guys and myself took it upon ourselves once, even, you know, Coach Beeline left to make an impact regardless of who was the coach. And we knew that we had the talent and the ability to do that. We just didn't know if we were going to get through as far as we did, which, again, was the Final Four and the Big East Championship.
When you look back at that team, just as a collective whole, talent-wise, why do you think you guys were successful?
You know, I think it goes along with knowing our role, right? I mean, guys weren't doing things that were out of character, and it's fair to say that over the course of the 3 years that, you know, we had, or at least I had with Hugs, that, you know, I know I wasn't trying to do anything that was out of the normal. And things that he wasn't comfortable with me doing, and all the things that we needed to do to win games, right? Deshaun had to score, right? We knew that he had to score. You know, KJ, myself, and others had to get rebounds and be aggressive when the opportunity presented itself. But yeah, I mean, I think guys just knew their role, knew how to do their role really well, and didn't go overboard with trying to do same things that they can't do.
And part of that process is Bob Huggins and the staff telling you guys exactly what it is that you do well and you don't do well, right? And so there's this process of evolution that you finally, I don't know if the light comes on or you finally get beaten down enough to know, okay, I get it. I'm not a 30-point scorer. I'm a rebounder defender. Is that right?
That's, that's a nice way of saying it. I think, you know, Hugs and the coaching staff do a great job of providing you with feedback, constructive feedback, in order for them to get the point across to saying that, hey, you know, whatever you did in high school isn't what you're going to be doing now, right? And whatever you did before I got here is not going to be what you're going to be doing now. So as much as all of us wanted to be able to be a Deshaun Butler or to be a Joe Alexander or even a Devin Ebanks, shoot, there's only one of those guys. And luckily, those guys are all on our team. So we had to do things that were sometimes didn't get noticed, and more often than not, wasn't in the stat book. So we understood that and thrived on that because again, we wanted to play. We wanted to play for West Virginia. We wanted to play for our teammates and for ourselves and for our families.
Every team that starts a season wants to play in the Final Four. Obviously, only four get there. Did you realistically think that your team had the chance, had the opportunity to get there, or when did it click that, hey, this can't happen for real?
Not to make people, to think that we, I didn't think that we could. No, I had no idea we'd be able to make it to the Final Four. I knew that we had a special team, especially after getting bounced in the NCAAs the previous season. I knew we had a special team, but I didn't know what the ceiling was for that team. I knew we'd be good, but Big East championship good, Final Four good, had no clue, right? So I think it clicked for me at least that we had a really good shot of a national championship. Once we won the Big East championship, I was like, this thing can actually happen. Right. And though it happened so late for me, it may have happened earlier for other guys. I didn't think really about it until that Big East run.
If you go back into that season, there was one game that Hugs often talks about, and I know you guys collectively talk about, the 22nd of February, 2010, at Connecticut. West Virginia loses 73-62. What happened in the locker room after the game is often talked about. Do you think that was a turning point?
I do because it wasn't Hugs, traditional post game speech. It was, more of a sit down. It was, you do something bad and, your mom or dad takes you on an hour-long drive and, so they can lecture you about how good you can be if you keep on doing the right things. And that's what it was like for me, at least, when being able to compare it to, other post-game speeches where, Hugs comes in a little bit more of a
Go ahead, you can say it.
Yeah, it was not dramatic, but more animated, right? This time he is he came in, spoke well below his normal tone, and gave us the realistic view. And Hugs to that point, and even now he was always realistic about where we are and what we can do and where our team is. And he said that this team has a chance to be special. And again, it didn't click for me until the Big East run, but it might have clicked for others, that UConn game. But I do remember that it was a big turning point because, at that point we didn't lose.
Right? Yeah. When you look back at it, I mentioned the Connecticut game. So you guys don't lose after that Connecticut game until Duke in the Final Four, but man, did you have some close calls, specifically last game of the regular season, and I know what you are thinking here, in Philly against Nova. I don't know. I guess I could pull it up. I think you were down 200-0 at halftime. I think it might be off by a point or two, but it looked absolutely bleak. Scotty Reynolds running up and down the floor, and you guys come back and find a way to win. Massive, huge win for you.
Yeah, that was a fun one. I actually am looking back because for whatever reason, 10 years is a long time, and I started looking back on YouTube trying to find specific games. That was a game I was trying to find because we were down a lot.
I just looked it up. Wells, you were down at halftime, 29-16. You scored 16 wow. points in the first half. And I know that Hugs came in the locker room yeah. and said, guys, we got no problems here because you can't play worse.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that is that you're exactly right. I mean, we were getting looks too. We were getting looks. We weren't really getting any stops. Nova was running away with the game, but it sounds like they were below what their season average probably was. Once we just started to make our shots, we were doing pretty well. Again, but you know, we knew that we would be able to be in any game as long as we played our game, right? Hugs always has this weird expression. I'm probably going to mess it up if I try it again, but it was around like saying, if we do what we do better than the other team does what they do well, then we're going to win. Right? And that's what that second half was like.
Yeah. The great philosopher, do what you do, right? We can do what we do better than they can do what they do. We're going to be just fine. You had a big game, by the way, in that Villanova game. You had 15. I don't know if you remember that or not. But I do remember you hit some key shots in that rally. West Virginia goes on and wins the game in overtime, which sets up the scene for the Big East tournament run. And you talk about tight games. You win against Cincinnati, 54-51. Notre Dame, 53-51. Championship game, 60-58. So your largest margin of victory at the Big East tournament was 3 points. The other two games were 2 points.
That was the entire season, it felt like. Yeah. Again, going back and watching some of these games, I watched the Louisville game to kind of just prepare myself for this call. In other games, the whole season was so close, right? And thank goodness we had Deshaun, because I tell you what, it could have been a very bleak season if those six game winners don't go in.
Yeah.
Right. It's a testament to our guys. For their hard work, and it's a testament to Deshaun to having the ability and the moxie to really be able to score those much needed baskets.
You went through a very difficult period collectively, you guys as a group, and I say you guys, the Coach Beilein recruits that came in thinking you were going to play for Coach Beilein and play a specific style, and then here comes Hugs. What was that transition period like? I know you guys were very, very stunned by it and very little celebration after the victory against Clemson in the NIT. All of a sudden, your world goes upside down. What was in your mind?
You know, it was, I asked Coach Beilein some very pointed questions, you know, during the recruiting process. And, you know, one of them was around, this is no, again, you know, I understand the business now, but but going back to when I was being recruited, I asked him if he'd ever leave West Virginia, right? Which may not have been a fair question, but I asked it anyway. And, you know, his answer obviously was a no, right? So, you know, like any, you know, 18, 19 year old, person, you know, which was, you know, immature in nature, well, you know, kind of felt a little bit betrayed, right? And a little annoyed about this whole process, right? You thought you were done. You know, you don't want to have to continue jumping through hoops. And for me, when I did a fifth year of high school, a postgraduate year, I wasn't trying to do another red shirt or do a red shirt year and sit out again, but and try to delay my life. So those are kind of things that I was thinking about individually. So, you know, when that happened, it was, all right, guys, let's get a bond, right? It was, I remember it was like Joe Mazzulla, myself, Deshaun, Cam, and Johnny. And it was, you know, kind of us five that really took it upon ourselves to you know, make something out of nothing, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
And to really show Coach Huggins and his staff that we can be his kind of guys, the kind of guys he may not have recruited, but the kind of guys he wants to be a part of his team. I think we did a pretty good job doing that.
What was the transition like? Did it stun you? Did it take you aback because of the style change?
It was different, right? Watching Hugs and when he was at Cincinnati, my thought process was, I've never played for this guy. Right? He wouldn't recruit me, and I would. And I'm not sure I would be good enough to play for him. It definitely stunned me specifically because the role that I had going into, I would say, my sophomore season, you know, I was going to be, you know, probably 215, you know, 215 pounds instead of, you know, I blew up to 225 just because I had to I wanted to play. I wanted to play for Hugs, and that was the only way I was going to be able to do that. And I went from playing the wing position to a center position. So that's a lot more weight on me. So yeah, it was dramatic, to say the least.
You'll be happy to know that earlier this season, when we were on the road, we were on the bus one day, and obviously we're just killing time. And I brought up the question. I said, top five athletes that you've had at West Virginia. Top five.
Yeah.
And collectively, the staff said your name. You're in the top five athletically as far as athletes go. I said, wow. I said, that's surprising. Nothing against you. They said, no, man. He was incredibly athletic, which gets us to the point. Your team's hidden credit card, I guess, would be the ability to switch 1 through 5, right, defensively, which caused all kinds of problems for opposing teams. And if you weren't athletic enough, you wouldn't be able to play both the five and then go out there and guard a guard.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. And I think, that particular team was ahead of its curve. When you talk about positionless basketball, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not bringing the ball up the floor. I'm going to pass that thing to Deshaun and Truck and Joe, right, or even Ebex. But, in terms of positionless, being the guard 1 through 5, we were able to do that. And that's what made us successful more often than not, just because we, at that time, we had freshmen that weren't able to play because of they were freshmen, right? And we had and our tallest guy was 6'9", which was Devin, and he was too frail to play the center position, right? So here we are with having to do what we can do to win games.
So let's jump in now to the tournament itself. You played close games in the Big East tournament, as I mentioned, but you get into the NCAA tournament, you roll over Morgan State by 27. You beat Missouri by 9. Now to the Carrier Dome you go, and you meet up against Washington. They got a couple of players on that team, very talented. What are your reflections and memories of the Washington game?
Washington game, they had, I want to say, Quincy Pondexter, another Holiday brother who ends up playing in the NBA and has
right.
a really good career. And I think maybe John Brockman may have left, but they have some really good players.
Isaiah Thomas, right?
Isaiah Thomas, yeah.
Yeah.
There's another one, right? So, yeah, they have some really good guys. Now, the unfortunate part for them is that they're going from coast to coast. Now, we didn't think through that, right, being athletes and basketball players. But we're just trying to out there win games, right? I think for some of us, it was just, hey, this might be a last hurrah, right? Knowing for Deshaun and I, and maybe for other guys, like, hey, we're not going to be as good as we are this year, so let's go out and try to win every single game we can. Going into that game, it was business as usual. I know for myself, we had some. I remember taking a half court heave with like 3 seconds left to go in the half and before the second half. Which I got just drilled for at halftime. I think Deshaun was right under the basket, and I could have passed to him for an easy layup. But going into that game, it was just business as usual. Let's move forward, and we know that we'll likely play Kentucky in the Elite Eight.
And it's exactly how it played out. So here you go. You play those guys, Washington, on a Thursday. Friday comes, it's a workout day, and here comes a Kentucky team as blue chip could possibly be. Mindset going into that game?
Oh, shit. you talk about that Friday workout. We also had film that morning. And, the first person – that is on the screen during the film session is DeMarcus Cousins, and 6'11", 280, and Coach Harrison is going through the scout and says, "Wells, you got him." Like, oh, great, thanks, Coach. Really looking forward to this one. But again, business as usual. The goal throughout the whole game was, limit paint touches, have their bigs play us out on the 3-point line, so that you know, I know our coaching staff was really hoping that I was able to make some threes during the course of that game. Lo and behold, we didn't make a two, and all we did was make threes during the course of the first half. And limit John Wall from driving in transition, and also have them shoot from long distance, which they didn't do a great job of. So we did a couple of those things really well. The other stuff was just things that we instinctively did well: rebound, defend, get to 50-50 balls, right? So, but again, we knew that they were freshmen and we were upperclassmen. We had the upper hand a little bit, right? Just from that standpoint, because we've been there. These guys have never been there before.
It's a great point, isn't it? Because everyone knows the story about that team. Six players drafted in the first round that were on the floor for Kentucky that night. And you say it's the fact that you were experienced. And that's always the interesting thing. That's the great equalizer, isn't it, in the NCAA tournament. And I know it's difficult to get old nowadays in college basketball because of the way things go. But when you do have that seasoned team, these kinds of things happen.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, leading up to it, you have those, you know, six NBA guys for that draft period. I think they end up with seven or eight, you know, when it's all said and done and everybody leaves from that particular team. And it's remarkable. It's a testament to our coaches, staff, and West Virginia, really, the fans and the people of West Virginia really came out to watch us play. And as much as there was blue, big blue, there was a ton of blue and gold. And, man, it was awesome to see that Carrier Dome. It was really awesome to see. I was happy at the fact that our people, our family, was able to come out and support us the way that they did.
Yeah, what a run it's been. Obviously, they went to New York for the Big East tournament, went to Buffalo, then they went up to Syracuse. It was a New York state of mind, obviously, for Mountaineer fans. You mentioned that crazy stat in that game was there were no two-point baskets in the first half by West Virginia, all threes. Those are deflating. I remember, obviously, Deshaun hit them. KJ hit them. Joe Mazzulla hit one as well. And you hit a three as well. When did the – there's two games that go on, right? There's the physical game and there's the mental game. When did you see Kentucky blink?
I would say after that first half. You know, they're playing. I just watched the game. I have my own business, and I'm doing some stuff where I'm watching these games with our kids, and I'm actually watching it for work as well. And I'm watching it, and I see these guys are really freaking out because, you know, we actually go into the second half with a lead.
Right.
You know, after these guys are playing their game, they're playing a physical game inside the paint. We didn't really do a great job of doing what we do well, which was rebounding and defending and getting to 50-50 balls. We just made threes, right? I think Deshaun in the first half had three threes. Like you mentioned, all the other guys, I had threes, I had a three. And we were just competing but we were used to that grind-out game. We have to do this in order for us to win. You mentioned all the games that we won by, you know, in between 6 points, that was our game. These guys were used to winning, were blowing people out. We're used to winning this way. Right? So, you know, the game wasn't over until it was over, where these guys were probably always looking for, you know, that backbreaker play, whether it was a big dunk or a nice transition play or three. We always used it as that's just game plays, right? And we were used to just consistently grinding it out and playing.
Talking with Joe Mazzulla about his defense on DeMarcus Cousins and obviously the way that he literally backed in on him and just frustrated the heck out of him. What was your takeaway on that? Because you mentioned that when the scouts started to be put out there to you guys, they said, all right, Wellington, you've got Cousins. To see what Joe did has got to be a head shaker.
You know what? Joe's done this before. he did it.
South Florida, right? The South Florida game.
South Florida, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right? I was going to bring him up, and that kid was huge. And got to a point where, you know, I wasn't doing anything against the South Florida kid. When Joe goes in and just battles him and takes him out of his game, right? And, you know, so Joe has been known, and Joe's just a tough dude anyway. He's been known to be able to get under people's skin, you know, grabbing, pulling, pushing, you know, and just defending the way that he does. He's just, he's did an awesome job on him battling in the 1-3-1. And then even when we did switch and he was down there with them and they didn't see him, right?
Yeah.
He may have been eclipsed by DeMarcus Cousins' size, but they still, you know, rarely got the ball to him. And when they got the ball to him, they didn't do anything on him. So, it just goes into the will and the heart that he has to be an effective basketball player. And it has shown in the way that he coaches with the Celtics and other programs that he's coached at.
What did you learn about yourself from that experience?
You know, from my entire actually college experience, nothing is going to be as difficult as that was, right? You know, and that goes along to saying, like, three in life, right? If I can say that a Bob Huggins practice is the most difficult thing I've ever been a part of, I'm okay with that, right? Like, I can get through things emotionally, but you know, there's an emotional, physical, there is a mental, you know, toll that, you know, these things take on you. And, you know, physically, I will never do something that is as pressing as that was. And that's, you know, that's a testament to Huggs and the way he was able to make us mentally tough. And the fact that I can take being mentally tough away from that particular season, from that particular game, I can take that away and use it at my disposal.
Yeah.
For whatever I come through.
Yeah, absolutely. Solid life lesson. Couple more things.
Yeah.
In talking to Joe Mazzulla, he said that period of time after the Kentucky game, going that week into the Final Four, he wishes that mentally he would have done it differently, because there are so many distractions that take place in advance of that game because you're going to the Final Four. When you look back on that, would you agree with him that focus was more difficult?
I would say so. I mean, granted, we're 22, 23-year-old guys. We just beat six NBA basketball players in a game that nobody thought we were going to win. You know, yeah, we're on cloud nine until the tip, right? And realizing that, yeah, this will be our last two games, meaning the final, the semifinal and the championship run. So let's go out and try to win them. Right? But again, we're on cloud nine. You know, shoot, we actually probably did think that the championship was ours for the taking. But you know, again, when Duke came out there and shot 60% from the field, or maybe even higher, and you know, basically didn't miss a shot in the first half, we were definitely wrong. But you know, mentally, yeah, I wish I could replay that game over and over, because I know that we win that game, shoot, 9 out of 10 times. I truly believe that, just the way that we've played during the course of that year.
What would you do differently?
I would say leading up to the game.
Both, I guess, leading up to it, and then actually, how would you have beaten those guys?
Yeah, you know what? I would have slowed the game down a little bit, right? I probably would have, you know, for me personally, I would have thought about how I could have, you know, defended better. The guy I was guarding wasn't really doing anything. Brian Zubek had, you know, and, you know, so maybe I could have switched or jumped on somebody that was doing a little bit more. I could have helped a little bit more. I could have shot the ball a little bit better than I did. Maybe been a little bit more aggressive, could have set more screens, harder screens. You know, a lot of different things run through your mind once the game is over with. I could have hustled back a little bit more in transition. But a lot of things come through your mind once the game is over with, and you realize that you have no more games left. Leading up to the game, you know, I think that, you know, me personally, I probably could have, you know, spoke up when I saw that we weren't all there, you know, just being a captain, a leader of the team. But, you know, knowing where we have been the entire season, that was just our nature, right? Being a little bit more playful than other times. But yeah, though, I think those are some things I would have done differently if I had the opportunity to.
Yeah. Once again, life lessons.
Oh yeah. No doubt. There's no going back, right?
Yeah. What's it, last question for you, what's it mean to have been part of a Final Four team, a Big East championship team, a Final Four team?
You know, those two things go with me everywhere I go, right? Whether it's, at home, right? at work, applying for new jobs, you know, reaching out to people about what I've done in my life, you know, public speaking opportunities. You know, when somebody can introduce you as, you know, a Big East champion and a Final Four participant, I mean, those things are pretty powerful things to be a part of. It means the world, and hopefully it means the world for the people of West Virginia. Hopefully it means the world for the guys that are competing every single day to try to get to that point. I know, you know, John and Deshaun and KJ have their podcast. They don't let these guys forget the things that we were able to do during the course of our run. And they shouldn't forget. Those are things that they should all aspire to be a part of. And I think this team has an opportunity, or this group that comes back next year really has an opportunity to get to where we were. If they do the things that they need to do to be successful. But yeah, it means the world to me and to my family, because it really does follow me everywhere I go.
Wellington Smith with Tony Caridi. Coming up next, hear from Commissioner Bob Bowlesby, head football coach Neil Brown. That's coming your way after this on MSN.
Lumos Networks is now Segra. Segra is proud to support the West Virginia Mountaineers, and we're proud to be investing in the future of Mountaineer Nation. Segra is one of the largest independent fiber bandwidth companies in the U.S. Our new dense fiber network provides the solutions, speed, diversity, scalability, and reliability West Virginia, the Mid-Atlantic, and the Southeast have been asking and waiting for. All across our footprint, Segra is providing customers with local attention and the fastest, most reliable fiber network in the region. Call 833-GO-SEGRA or visit www.segra.com to learn more. We are Segra. Let's go, Mountaineers!
And welcome back to the Mountaineer Insider, everybody. This week, Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby holding a teleconference, breaking down the financial impact that COVID-19 has had on the league.
The canceled basketball championship games in Kansas City, it looks like it'll cost us about $6.6 million. The NCAA Board of Governors just took action to distribute $225 million compared to $600 million. So we would normally get about $24 million from that. And instead, I think that distribution is going to be around $10 million. So we're going to take some hits there. We are in the process of determining the reductions that we'll see in our television distribution and in our sponsorship fulfillments in conjunction with both the basketball and the other championships that we have. All is not negative, however. We had a second team in the CFP, and so we will receive some money from that. We will have, as a result of what we call member participation subsidies, we'll probably save about $3.5 million between now and the end of the year on that. We got $1 million supplemental basketball revenue payment that came in earlier this year. It's already in the bank, and my guess is that we'll save maybe $2.5 to $4 or $5 million from budget variance in not hosting conference championships and then downsizing conference operations. Everyone is working from home right now, and so we don't know how long that will go on, obviously. But there are some fairly good size negatives, and there are a few positives that will make a difference. But it looks like the net could be in the 15 to 18 million range, which obviously goes directly to distribution. But it's those are round numbers. It's a little early to determine if that's going to play itself out.
Bowlsby also covering a lot of ground, saying that it's full steam ahead on the name, image, and likeness matters before the sport. Also, the commissioner, he would not commit to the eligibility questions that are really prominent right now, especially as it pertains to the spring sports athletes, seniors in particular, getting that additional year. Meanwhile, Neil Brown addressing reporters, holding a press conference over the web. Brown and his staff working hard on recruiting within the confines of the dead period instilled throughout the remainder of the month on teams around college sports. His team, as you would suspect, right, in the age bracket that's drawing scrutiny about how serious they're taking this pandemic. He said the gravity of the situation is starting to sink in on the guys.
It's evolving. It is. I think the age group that we deal with, the 17 to 22, 23, probably has been the slowest as a group. I'm just grouping people together. I'm not saying individually, but has been the slowest to come to terms. This is something we've been dealing with now. We've been trying to communicate with our guys probably since the beginning of March, maybe the end of February. And I think this week is when the severity of the situation is really starting to hit home. I think this pandemic is something that's going to affect everybody, whether it's, somebody who's been diagnosed, somebody that's on the front line that's fighting this. You're suffering through the financial ramification. I think everybody's going to be affected by it. I think it's probably going to get worse before it gets better. I think everybody understands that. And so I do think they here in probably this week have understood the severity. I think our staff did a really good job of trying to stay in front of this as best we could. I thought they did a really good job last week during spring break while everybody was gone to really monitor where everybody's at and try to educate these guys. What is social distancing? We had multiple, we even sent some videos out kind of educating them what social distancing is. We've really emphasized staying home. At the beginning, did they understand? Probably not. Have we been perfect? Definitely not. Are they starting to understand the severity of it now? I do believe so.
As many of you know, West Virginia is knee-deep in their construction projects to enhance the Pushcar Center.
What I'll tell you is the construction is ongoing. They're continuing to work. I have not been by the stadium since the weekend. I'm trying to do our part and stay here. But I do know that the meetings are continuing via remotely. I know that the construction group is still in. So as far as has it affected the timeline, I think it's too early to tell. The crews are having to abide by social distancing policies that are in place. But work is continuing to be done on the Pushcar Center.
You can find the entire presser from Neil available for a download right here on our Art19 platform that distributes to many of the podcast platforms that you're listening to right now. Certainly worth a listen. and we'll continue to keep you posted, folks, with what we get and who we talk to, what we know as things change day by day, hour by hour. In the meantime, please, again, we urge you to stop the spread and do your part. Stay inside and use this time in the most productive fashion that you possibly can, as we, as a society, have to hit the pause button on the hustle and bustle that is life in 2020. But with every hardship comes a blessing, and hopefully you'll find that, and maybe this Mountaineer Insider podcast was a little bit of all of that, a needed distraction from the stresses that we're all right now having to endure. Until then, as always, hail West Virginia. Let's go Mountaineers. This is Dan Zangrilli thanking you so much for joining us on this edition of the Mountaineer Insider podcast on the Mountaineer Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College.
You've been listening to the Mountaineer Insider here on the Mountaineer Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. The Mountaineer Insider has been presented exclusively by Segra, powering organizations of all sizes with state-of-the-art voice, data, and internet services. And be sure to find the latest news and information on the Mountaineers at WVUsports.com. The following has been a presentation of Learfield IMG College.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.